This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Russia wants energy payments to be made in rubles. The question is, how will Moscow enforce it? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Russia's currency has strengthened further against the U.S. dollar today. That's ahead of an announcement from the government there about when and how it will require payments for energy exports in its own currency, the ruble, rather than via the current euro-denominated contracts. Such a move would help shore up the ruble, which has been hit by sanctions for the country's war on Ukraine. Rumors of the change, though, spurred Germany yesterday to start emergency preparations for potential supply disruptions. It relies on Russia for nearly half its natural gas. The BBC's Jenny Hill is in Moscow with more on what's expected from the Kremlin today.
It's really confusing. Last week, Vladimir Putin said that unfriendly countries who buy Russian gas will have to pay for it in rubles as of the beginning of April. But what we're not clear about is how that's going to work. You know, it's caused a great deal of consternation in many Western countries. We're still not quite sure what's going to happen. Vladimir Putin, for example, spoke with the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz last night. Now, the German readout of that call says that Mr. Putin agreed that Germany would be able to pay in euros to a Russian company, which would then convert into rubles. The Kremlin have been rather less clear about the phone call, so we don't really know what's going to happen. What we do know is, according to a Kremlin spokesman, is that the Russians are trying to come up with some kind of mechanism to handle the practicalities of this. So Russia says it wants to be paid in rubles, but they've got to make that possible.
And the ultimate question, I suppose, is will Western nations who are very reliant on Russian oil and gas agree to this payment system? Because we saw a warning yesterday from Germany saying that they're preparing for supply disruptions already.
Yeah, Germany is preparing for a sort of state of emergency, if you like, telling people that, you know, they're going to have to use less gas, but also saying that they will prioritise households over industrial use. As you know, Western countries say it's a breach of contract to be forced to pay in rubles because that's not what the contract was built on. So we're going to have to see what happens in the coming days.
The BBC's Jenny Hill for us in Moscow. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, checking some other numbers now, global crude prices are tumbling on reports the U.S. will release a record amount of oil from its strategic petroleum reserve. President Biden is expected to make a speech at 1:30 Eastern time this afternoon that includes strategies for bringing down gas and energy prices in America. At this hour, the Brent and West Texas crude benchmarks are down 4.8 and 5.8% respectively. Global stock markets, meanwhile, are lower. The United Nations is launching a fundraising appeal for Afghanistan today. It's looking to raise nearly $4.5 billion for humanitarian operations in the country. It's the largest appeal the organization has made for any single country. The BBC's Imogen Folks has more on that story from Geneva.
Afghanistan has suffered four decades of conflict and, more recently, successive drought. 60% of its people are going hungry. Sanctions have stopped the salaries of tens of thousands. Afghan families are selling their belongings to put food on the table. Child labour and child marriage are increasing. The UN hopes donor countries will be generous, but some donors may be reluctant to fund a country run by the Taliban.
That's the BBC's Imogen Folks reporting there. To Pakistan now, where Prime Minister Imran Khan faces a vote of no confidence in Parliament. Lawmakers have gathered today to begin debating the motion. The opposition and now many of his former allies have accused the cricket star-turned-politician of economic mismanagement during his 4 years in office. From Islamabad, the BBC's Farhad Javid explains inflation is one of the biggest problems facing households.
Inflation in Pakistan is the highest in any country in South Asia, and citizens here are struggling to make ends meet as prices of essential goods is rising to unprecedented levels. he does have a huge support in the public, but we have been speaking with federal ministers and they admit that it's the middle class and lower middle class, which is the largest in number and in population-wise, they suffer the most due to the policies that Imran Khan and his government have been adopting. There was a huge public gathering that Imran Khan held. In fact, on the same day, opposition parties were doing a public rally. I went to the rally that Imran Khan was doing and I have been speaking to some of the people there.
We're here to support Imran Khan. It's a war between right and wrong, and Khan is on the right side. And the whole nation has decided we will now break the chains of slavery.
No confidence mission, chahe kamyab ho ya na kamyab ho.
It really doesn't make a difference whether a no confidence motion passes or fails, because we are supporting only Imran Khan's truth. This is the only purpose of us joining this rally today. We have nothing to do with who is ruling or anything else in this country.
So those are some voices of people who are supporting the prime minister there. The question to you then, Farhat, is what has caused the economic problems that we're seeing in Pakistan? Because countries all over the world have been suffering from slow growth, high inflation for a number of reasons, ranging from pandemic to war in Ukraine.
I think it has been mostly linked with increasing debt on Pakistan. Before coming to power, he promised that he would try to make Pakistan independent of all the international monetary bodies that Pakistan is very much dependent on. But when he came to power, in fact, he had been agreeing to more tough and more strict conditions by these bodies like IMF, etc. So this is where his trouble started.
And so this no confidence vote is likely to be held early next week. What do Imran Khan's prospects look like? Is he likely to lose that?
Khan is perhaps facing, you know, one of the most crucial moments in his political career. We can safely say that Khan has lost the majority that he even needed to form a government in the parliament. He's facing a lot of pressure. If he is not successful in bringing back his allies and the members of his own party who are now on the opposition side, there is a fair chance that he won't win this vote of no confidence. And if that happens, he'll have to leave the office and there would be a new prime minister elected in the parliament.
And if the economy is at the center of all this, does the opposition have a plan to bolster the economy?
That's a very interesting question. And we have been asking this question from members of the opposition parties as well as the government. Opposition so far has not presented any plan. And they have been, in fact, reluctant about presenting a new budget, which is due in June this year. So they say that if they come to power, they would come up with some new economic plan.
The BBC's Farhat Javid for us in Islamabad. Thanks for breaking this down for us.
Thank you, Victoria.
And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.